Today on Off Mic, we talk about the controversy over a 9/11 parade float in Valparaiso last week and more issues of potential bias happening in that city. We talk to a motivational speaker about being positive, and it's Hispanic Heritage Month. We talk about the issues and get a jump start on the month. All this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, reporter with WBEZ Radio in Chicago. Last Saturday was the 20th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks. While there was tributes to mark the day all over the country, one tribute got a lot of people here talking. The Valparaiso Republican Party sponsored a float in Valpo's Popcorn Festival parade. The float depicted the two twin towers with gaping holes in each of them. Valpo Republicans defend the float, with so many calling it tasteless and insensitive. Kat Peters is a resident of Valparaiso and is part of a group called Allies Against Racism. She's here to talk about the float and the controversy and other things. Welcome to Off Mic, Kat.
Thanks for having me.
So, Kat, did you go to the Popcorn Festival parade?
Yes, I was there with my family.
And before we get into everything, how was it to actually, because I'm sure the parade was probably canceled last year because of COVID. How did you feel going back out there this year?
Yeah, it was, you know, of course, a little bit. I was wondering if I should go just because of, you know, going into a big crowd of people and thinking about COVID. But I have two small kids and, of course, they love getting all the candy at the parade. So we thought it'd be fun and just see what, you know, what the different floats were and what the different community organizations were sharing in the parade.
Okay, so I didn't go to the parade, but, you know, on that day I was somewhere else and somebody sent me a picture of the float. And they're like, oh my God, can you believe this? While you were sitting there in Valparaiso looking at the Popcorn Festival parade and that float came around, what was your initial thought?
Right. Well, you know, I was sitting there with my kids on the side of the road and I saw the float go by and I just had kind of a visceral reaction to seeing the towers on the float. And I think I was on a side of the float, perhaps where I couldn't see the holes in the side, but I could see smoke coming out. And it, you know, it kind of brought back this trauma feeling of, you know, that day 20 years ago. I was a high school student then, and I, you know, it just felt kind of icky, you know. And then later in the day, I saw more photos of the other side of the float with the holes, and it just kind of made my stomach drop.
Right. What was the reaction of the float as it was going by you? Were people like clapping? To me, it just looked, how would anybody put that together on the 20th anniversary and a Republican organization at that and think that was okay?
Right. That was my feeling when it went by. You know, I think there were mixed reactions. There were all of the people in the actual float and the people walking with it were sort of clapping loudly and encouraging people to stand on their feet and clap. And so some people were doing that and other people around me were sort of shocked or silent. That was sort of how I felt. I just sat there wondering what was going on and didn't feel really, you know, like clapping or even looking at the float.
Right. And so there's been a lot of discussion on that video of the float has really gotten a lot of attention nationwide, actually. And
wow, yeah.
What have people in Valparaiso been thinking about it? Because I obviously on Facebook pages, people are defending it. Some people are criticizing it. What are the regular folks in Valpo talking?
Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, on social media and also just with people that I know sort of, shock and disappointment that this would be the representation of our town in the media. I think a lot of us, you know, unfortunately are realizing that this is a the representation of our town that's being put out there. And I think there's just a lot of disappointment even in the prize committee that gave this float an honorable mention, which I think has made a lot of us wonder or be concerned about just the leadership in our town.
So, you know, in a conversation we had prior to this interview, we were talking a little bit about, you know, usually one of the things that Valparaiso is known for, you know, it's being a very progressive town and has a human relations commission to deal with some of these things. Do you know if they have any plans to talk about this?
You know, I'm not sure. I know that the Human Relations Council is planning to have a meeting later this month. However, unfortunately, the Human Relations Council here in Valparaiso hasn't been meeting regularly. If you go to their page on the Valpo City website, it says that they meet monthly. I believe it's the fourth Tuesday of every month, but they have not been meeting regularly since March of this year. They have had numerous meetings called and then canceled. I believe after March, the only other meeting they've had has been in July. And this has sort of come on the heels of some contentious conversations having to do with racism in the schools that kind of culminated in the March 2021 meeting. And ever since then, the Human Relations Council hasn't been meeting.
And you think they should be meeting regularly to talk about things like this?
That's right. You know, the Human Relations Council's purpose is to, you know, they have four purposes laid out in their resolution or their, you know, that started them. It's on the city website. And one of them is advising the mayor on the status of human relations in the city and identifying special needs or opportunities to enhance such relations. You know, and it has three other purposes that have to do with helping in racially or ethnically motivated incidents or promoting better understanding with minorities and serving as a liaison between the mayor's office and minority groups. And, you know, it's a special entity created to do those things, and it's just not functioning.
Yeah. You know, real quick, before we get a little bit further in this conversation, I do want to read what Michael Simpson, chairman of the Porter County GOP, sponsored of the float and the popcorn festival that drew a lot of attention and criticism, what he posted on Facebook. He says, our popcorn festival float was inspired by the courage and sacrifice of those we lost on September 11, 2001. And recently in Kabul, Afghanistan. We felt it important considering the parade coincided with the 20th anniversary of that horrible day and that Indiana welcomed home one of the Afghan fallen the next day to dedicate our float not to politics and to candidates, but to the innocent civilians, first responders, and brave military who perished and whose memories we'll never forget. We wish no disrespect and regret that our tribute to the lives lost and those who continue to serve was to some perceived in bad taste. So, I mean, at least they're acknowledging it. And although on the Facebook page, a lot of people are like, well, you shouldn't have to apologize and, you know, don't give in to liberals. I mean, honestly, if it was a sincere apology, and maybe it is, I haven't had a chance to talk to Michael Simpson, he probably would have taken those comments down. But, you know, who knows?
Right.
But, I mean, there's no question it was in bad taste.
Right.
So tell me a little bit about your group that you belong to, Allies Against Racism. How long have you been around, and what are some of the issues you've been tackling?
Yeah, Allies Against Racism has existed for, you know, more than 5 years. I've been a part of it for about the past year or so. You know, they started out as a group of concerned citizens just working on issues of racism, you know, for a number of years. And then starting about a year ago, we've kind of focused our efforts to learn more and respond more to issues going on, especially in the Valparaiso community schools. And this is, you know, related to the Human Relations Council, because in August of last year, August 2020, the Human Relations Council had a special meeting in order to hear perspectives regarding the hiring of the new superintendent of schools. And a number of students there presented information about racial bullying in the schools. And so, you know, our group and the Human Relations Council were both kind of working to address this, especially related to protecting, you know, students of color in our community.
And has there, what have been some of the issues that you've been troubled by in Valparaiso that perhaps it needs more addressing?
Right. So, you know, the students at that particular meeting discussed being at school and hearing someone say in the Pledge of Allegiance that, you know, everyone is what, let's see if I can find the exact quote, but let's see. Someone said, "Liberty and justice for all except Black people." And this comment in the school by a fellow classmate who said this to a Black classmate was never dealt with at the school. Or other students that were being called the N-word in the classroom were never, you know, that incident and issue was never dealt with as a bullying incident at the school. But just even most recently, a business owner in Valparaiso reported hearing another local business owner who was at her restaurant using the N-word, referring to her employees and saying that he didn't want any more N-word people in his town. And just last Tuesday, also, there was a rally in front of the courthouse in Valparaiso, and a Brazilian resident of town was told to go back to their country. So, you know, there have been numerous incidents that are causing people of color, especially in Valparaiso, to feel, you know, very afraid and hurt. Another incident was, you know, for September 11th, the high school football team held a Patriot Night, and they had special t-shirts printed with the Gadsden flag symbol printed on the sleeve. And this also has caused people of color to feel afraid and hurt, given the use of the Gadsden flag by white supremacists.
What is that? For people who are unfamiliar, what is the Gadsden flag?
Yeah, the Gadsden flag is the yellow flag with the snake on it that says, "Don't tread on me," which, you know, historically was not necessarily a symbol of hate groups, but has recently been used by white supremacist groups in their rallies and their actions. It was also, you know, you can see video of Capitol police officers being beaten with the Gadsden flag at the January 6th insurrection. So the, you know, the current use of that symbol is not one that, you know, we would like, our town would like to be seeing on our high school football team's t-shirts.
So definitely you think there's a need for further conversation in Valparaiso these days around a lot of these issues.
Yeah, you know, I think unfortunately, like you mentioned about, you know, remembering September 11th, but this is a national sort of conversation, but all of these sort of polarized and politicized conversations that are happening all over the country are, of course, happening here in Valparaiso, having to do with party politics, with how we remember September 11th, how we think about the military, how we think about race. And we happen to have in Valparaiso a Human Relations Council that is supposed to help us discuss these issues. And, you know, due to, I think, some of the same problems of politicization and polarization, it's not functioning. And so, you know, we want our community leaders, the city level, the schools, the churches, the universities, civic organizations, you know, to stand up against white supremacy and hatred, but also we want our community to be able to discuss these issues and move on and become better.
Kat Peters is a resident of Valparaiso and is part of a group called Allies Against Racism. Kat, thank you so much for bringing some of these issues to us on Off Mic today.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back with more Off Mic.
Yo sé que esto no volverá a pasar, pero si volviera a pasar, sé que sería tu debilidad, porque la noche fue algo que yo no puedo explicar. Solo dando y dándole sin parar. Tú me decías que morías por mí.
Porque la noche fue algo que yo no puedo explicar. Estar dando y dándole sin parar. Tú encima de mí, yo encima de ti. Tú me dejaste el cuerpo caliente infierno, pero me dejaste el corazón frío invierno. Soñando que contigo es que duermo.
Dime, papi.
Dime, mami. Esa noche que...
Well, welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. That is the Latin singer Bad Bunny with Rosalia, La Noche de Anoche, meaning last night's night. We are in Hispanic Heritage Month, and just yesterday, the month got kicked off with Mexican Independence Day. So with that, what better time than to speak with Lauren Pacheco, Director of Arts Programming and Engagement at Indiana University Northwest in Gary. She's in studio, so I'm so happy to have her here. Well, welcome, Lauren. Welcome to Off Mic.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great, great. So we're just going to be talking a little bit of some general stuff because it is Hispanic Heritage Month. Let me ask you, Lauren, what does that mean to you when you hear that we're in Hispanic Heritage Month?
You know, I think it's an opportunity for those of Hispanic background, Latino, Latina, Latinx background, to remind each other of the wonderful things that we are working on in our particular discipline. And to also, you know, really kind of highlight the ways in which we're working across disciplines, across fields to uplift our communities. So whether we have folks working in the arts discipline or the science discipline, that while silo busting is always encouraged, right, there are really unique accomplishments that we're making every day in our fields. And why not have a month to celebrate that and to raise some flags in the air, which is really quite fun to see when you're driving around at night or during the day.
Right. You know, is this a time, do you think, that we should be talking about culture and fun things, or is it a time to get into issues?
I think both. I think every day of the year we should be talking about our cultural differences, our unique nuances and peculiarities as individuals in the world. But it's also an opportunity for us to highlight some of these really important issues that need to be discussed and not, you know, sort of limit it to one month. But if we are to take advantage of this month in particular, why not use it as a time to push some of our political leaders, our civic leaders, some of our thought leaders to consider our voices raised very loudly during this time so that we can move forward with some change making.
Right. And what are some of the things, some of the activities you're looking forward to in this month?
Well, at IUN particularly, we're really interested in the ways in which we are using our non-traditional and traditional public spaces, like our galleries and our theaters, right? So leaning on some of our academics to think through the ways in which the Latinx lens is integrated in their classroom, as well as in our surrounding community in Northwest Indiana. It's also an opportunity for us to invite new influencers, trendsetters, and thinkers into our campus in the region so that we can share what's happening across our county lines, share what's happening in Illinois and Indiana. So, you know, that's really exciting. And I think it's, you know, as we sort of end our summertime, it's also that opportunity for us to see some familiar faces or reconnect with some old ones. So before the snow comes, right?
That's right. And, You know, there's so many things that are happening right now in the world regarding Latinos, where it's, we're a very fast growing minority group. And there's also this, I wasn't sure we were going to talk about this a little bit, but there's this controversy about we all get tied up with names. Some people don't like Hispanic. Some people do. Some people, you know, there's a new phrase that people use or new term called Latinx. Mm-hmm. What's your thought about that?
Well, first of all, disclaimer, I'm not a historian or a researcher on this. And we all have opinions, I'm sure. I know that Latinx is really not a term that's used very frequently in my family, especially with my mother and that particular generation.
She probably doesn't like it at all.
Not at all. Not at all. We are very proud. Well, I'm a very proud Mexican, fourth generation Mexican American. And so, you know, introducing new terms, I think, takes time. I know that there was a Pew research that recently was released, and it said like 3% of folks, Latin folks, actually use the term Latinx. You know, I just know a little bit about it. You know, it was released sometime in 2004, right? And has been
wow, that early.
Yeah, and has become part of a sort of more public consciousness. Obviously, you know, it's definitely more with the removal of the A and the O, gender inclusive, which I think is, you know, a wonderful attribute. But I think that there's just a lot of miscommunication or lack of awareness of how it is that we can use it. And so we're still, you know, struggling at the university with how we represent this group, as well as through some of my own cultural programming. What are the ways in which we're presenting these words so that we're not, you know, making some folks feel like they're not part of a conversation?
Okay, so we're playing a little bit Selena here, and I got to ask you something. You know, the whole, again, the Latinx controversy. I think I understand the reasoning behind using Latinx, and I think it's to be inclusive, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, we're living in times where some people don't go by gender identity, and some people might. I had one person explain it to me, a young female Latina, who says, "Well, you know, I'm not a Latino. I'm at least a Latina." Mm-hmm. So she kind of accepts Latinx to be inclusive. But as we all know, when you're talking about the community in general, you're within the Latino community. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about an individual who happens to be female, you go with Latina.
Sure.
But now with so many, you know, again, gender an issue, I guess Latinx, I guess, is to be inclusive, although a lot of people do cringe when they hear it.
Yeah, well, I think because it's largely used in academic, more elitist environments, and you know, generally makes people feel a bit uncomfortable because of just lack of awareness or just sort of understanding how it's used in narrative or context. Being able to identify ourselves across many buckets, right? I think it's the really sort of special part of being a human in our world is that we can, you know, check many boxes. You know, I very proudly say I'm a Mexican American, but I'm also a Chicagoan. I'm a Southsider, right? And so there's many ways that I can describe myself. And so it's something I think that, you know, we will continue to ask questions. And I think that's a great thing that we can ask questions and push back and say no. But I definitely know that my mother is one that is not supportive of the Latinx. She is a very proud Latina, Hispanic, Mexican.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. How, you know, one of the fascinating things I think about Hispanic Heritage Month, I'm Mexican American like you are, but it gives us an opportunity to explore other Latin culture that we may be less familiar with. Of course, a lot of us have a lot of Puerto Rican friends, so maybe that's more familiar, but certainly Cubano, Chilean, Colombia, there's so many different nationalities that make up the Latin culture, including being Spaniards. Sure. How do you like to use this month?
You know, it's definitely an opportunity for me personally to expand my own sort of knowledge base of the the art, the culture, the food of groups not representing my own background. And, you know, it's an opportunity for me to explore some of these cultural and civic spaces that are presenting art exhibits to the public. And I think that's a really wonderful opportunity for this month for the cultural community in particular, as well as festivals in our neighborhoods, to explore some of these sort of unknown areas where you have these sort of clusters of other cultural communities who live and gather and present in the public. So I like to use that this time as a moment to get out into the neighborhoods, meet other communities where they are, and to experience things that are not part of my everyday. I think that with Ancestry DNA and having this opportunity to see what our other makeup is really fascinating, to sort of connect with some of those unknown racial groups that we find ourselves a part of.
You're right, because a lot of people might just fall back on, okay, well, you know, you're Mexican, you know, by default, you should know about our Hispanic culture. But, you know, there's so many different nuances to it. A lot of history involved. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people probably don't realize why Hispanic Heritage Month is this time. It's when so many, Mexico, of course, so many Central American and Southern South American countries, this is when they broke free from the Spaniards.
Sure.
So many of them, you're going to be hearing about a lot of Independence Day as we move along this month.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not only recognizing what cultural, historical moments happen in our sort of home mother countries, right? But it's also the wonderful impacts here in America and the ways in which the Latino, Latinx community has helped to build the America that we know today. Yeah.
How do we balance with the pride of being Hispanic and wanting to celebrate it with so many things we see in the news, everything from, you know, ongoing homicides in Chicago to, well, if you want to use that term, crisis at the border? I'm not going to use that term, because, look, as long as we keep advertising us as being the best country in the world, people are going to flock to this country to make a better life for themselves, whether there's a Republican in office or a Democrat in office. It's a great country, and if you want to be a part of it. So how do we balance all that when there's this constant barrage, at least from certain factions, to try to bring down the community?
Sure. You know, I think it's very easy to use the Latino, the Latinx community to politicize a particular agenda, right? But I think it's an opportunity to look at some of the census data and to recognize that this community is a very fast-growing community. And there's an opportunity there to cultivate future generations as we look to sustain and build a better America. And that is also looking at the ways in which we impact our educational system, the ways in which we look at the great, you know, racial and equity disparities in our communities, and to, you know, really try to prop up and provide a platform for some emerging political and civic leaders who are really the best folks to be able to advocate for some of the racial injustices that are happening in many of our communities. I like to err on the side of, you know, there's great potential in working with, you know, communities of color. And, you know, we don't always have to politicize or create an agenda of division.
Just playing a little bit of Santana here. Lauren, let's talk a little bit about a project and a book that you've been a part of. And it's talking about this culture of Slow and Low, Chicago's Lowrider Festival. And sort of, there's a book on it with beautiful pictures and everything. Tell us about Slow and Low.
Sure. So in 2010, my collaborator and co-founder, actually my brother, Peter Keffa Pacheco, and I founded Chicago Lowrider Festival, and it's affectionately called Slow and Low Fest in our community. And it started out of a passion for the customized car, right? These cars that were really popularized in Los Angeles, California in the 1940s, where cars were stripped of particular mechanical elements, dropped to the ground, and then decorated with really beautiful murals and upholstery. And so my brother had a particular interest in developing some type of a gathering where we would pull together Chicago car clubs. And it really just kicked off from there. We moved into our 10th year, one of the largest outdoor festivals, bringing together over 300 lowrider and customized cars. So these are cars that, you know, hop, right? So they've created these hydraulic systems and particular suspension systems that allow them to drop and almost sort of look like they're dragging on the floor. But the creative elements involved in these cars are just really spectacular. And it's really a folk art, a contemporary American pop culture phenomenon. And you know, we've had to take a year off because of COVID, unfortunately. But our last festival brought over 15,000 people. And it's really just this celebration of community culture, a super intergenerational events. And we're hoping to bring it back next year.
What do we find at these lowrider festivals? I mean, if you're into cars and almost sometimes muscle cars, mm-hmm. these are the kind of things you want to go to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if there is no lowrider festival if we don't have the cars. So the cars are the primary object and on exhibition. And so we are not like a car show. So this sort of air of competition we try to take away from this event. It's an opportunity for these cars to be on exhibit, much like an exhibition you would see in a contemporary art museum. But we also sort of integrate local DJs and local musical entertainment, right? So you'll have everything from soul music to Motown to hip hop and house, really celebrating music culture in Chicago, as well as having a vendor area, right? So we work primarily with black and brown vendors so that they can, you know, show off and share some of their art making as well. But it's, you know, celebrating with food and beer and good other types of entertainment. But it's really a gathering where people pop up a tent and stay for 8 hours just admiring cars. It's almost like you're walking miles and miles, car after car and bicycle after bicycle. It's really a lovely event.
Lauren, how long have you been teaching or part of IUN's community?
So this year in November will mark 3 years. 5 years ago, I moved to Gary, Indiana, but 3 years, almost 3 years at IUN.
And you've done so much work in trying to promote arts, and not just within the walls of IUN, but outside and taking a look at the spaces that can be used as artwork. What are some of the things you've done?
So I really believe since coming to IUN, it's really important as part of my own independent art practice as a social practice artist is to encourage the institution to invest in their surrounding community, right? And so while we want to be able to welcome folks onto our campus, it's just as important for us to have some type of exposure and presence in our surrounding community. So not everyone can afford the opportunity to get into a vehicle and travel and experience art on campus. So a part of this process has been to develop what we call the Art in Action Mobile Lab, where we sort of create an experience, an exhibition experience in the community. So we would pop up in a vacant lot, a parking lot, on a street, and present this really sort of high quality curated experience for folks. So we want to take some of our academic teaching and learnings and cultural experiences into the community. Also in downtown Gary, I started a project called #PaintGary, which is a public art project that looks to create painted artworks on blighted buildings. As we know, Gary is dealing with an issue of blighted buildings that will soon be demolished. And so I think it's an opportunity in that short period of time to beautify the space until the city is able to figure out what they want to do with those environments.
Fantastic, fantastic. And we were mentioning earlier that IUN has received a special award for being one of the top educational institutions serving Hispanics.
Sure. So we have the honor of this special federal distinction called the Hispanic Serving Institute, which means that 25% of our student population are Hispanic. Mm-hmm. And that affords our institution with a particular set of federal funds so that we can better support our campus community as well as this constituency. It's also an opportunity for us to agenda plan. So there's a really great group of individuals in leadership on our campus that come together monthly to discuss an agenda that's constantly constantly evolving and changing and thinking about the ways in which we can bring additional resources to our campus, enhance that learning experience, as well as, you know, opportunities to engage some of our alumni. So it's a very special distinction. It took a lot of work to get there, and now the goal is to sustain and to grow that population.
Great. You know, my last question about Hispanic Heritage Month, you know, so many things are going to be happening over the next month. How do we, you think it's, how do we invite others to learn more about our culture? It seems like a lot of times us being Latinos, we tend to like think those who are non-Latino should just know that, sure. Oh my God, mm-hmm. How could you not know this or this and that? But it really is an opportunity to, okay, grab one of your white or black friends or Asian friends and say, let's go do something Hispanic, maybe even something I'm not that familiar mm-hmm. with. Let's learn about something mm-hmm. and use it as an invitation to go out and drink something new or dance a new dance.
Sure. I think the really wonderful thing about humans is that we enjoy dancing and music, right? Mm-hmm. All of these sort of cultural moments.
Yeah,
right? And so, you know, we can really easily use those types of moments as ways to connect with people and eating, right, and having a good time. And I think there's really opportunities for learning to happen through those types of fun experiences. But like I said, you know, I think that, you know, celebrating and thinking about the ways in which the Latin community has impacted and our modern day is to celebrate it and think about it every day of the year, just as it should be with Black History Month and Asian Awareness Month and Coming Out Day. It should be part of our public consciousness, and so we all play a role in helping to elevate these conversations, whether over food or over dance or over you know, having a lecture around a particular book. And so we should do more, and we have to do more.
Well, that's Lauren Pacheco, Director of Arts Programming and Engagement at Indiana University Northwest in Gary. Lauren, thank you so much for being here today to talk about this and being in studio. Thank you so much.
So happy to be here. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. And we'll be back with more Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Micah Puente. Our next guest is the author of Authenticity Reawakened, The Path to Owning Your Life Story and Fulfilling Your Purpose. It's by author Vicki Znaver. Vicki, welcome to Off Mic.
Mike, I'm really happy to be with you here today.
Fantastic, fantastic. And truth be told, we've been trying to line up this interview for a while. Vicki, we've been exchanging some emails over the last couple of weeks and days. Vicki got on this show, and I got to express this just early on. Obviously, I'm a graduate of Calumet College of St. Joseph, and I'm always helping out with their fundraising. And this past fundraising in the spring, they had it for their banquet and to raise scholarships for a lot of students there, a lot of minority students there. And one of the auction items was to become a guest on Lakeshore Public Radio on Off Mic. So, and Vicki won the prize. So thank you so much, Vicki, for supporting Calumet College and their scholarship efforts.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I'm also an alum of Cal College.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm on the Board of Trustees. So I'm always excited to help out the wonderful school any way that I possibly can.
Fantastic. Well, great. Well, okay. Well, let's get into this book. Well, before we get into it, I do know in some of the materials that you sent me, you spent a lot of time working in Chicago and in banking and a lot of corporate history there. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
Oh, sure. So I spent over 40 years, which it's hard to believe how quickly the time has gone. But I really started out, you know, when I first graduated from high school, which I went to Whiting High School. And I came from a family that really couldn't afford to help me go to college. That's why I'm so passionate about education. And I went to work right away for a small company in Chicago. And then When I was 21, I started working for a large global corporation. You've probably heard of Sara Lee Corporation. I spent most of my career there, over 26 years. But I went to night school for 15 years, all of that, or most of it, with Cal College, as a matter of fact, and then went on to get my MBA at DePaul. But I started out as just a, you know, clerk in a small company, and then continued to be passionate about the work that I was doing, passionate about learning on the job. And back then, in the early 80s, you could still learn on the job and get a decent job without a degree. But, you know, I kept my eye on the prize. That's why going to school at night for 15 years was fine with me. I was raising my kids and going to school and climbing the corporate ladder, ultimately making it to the C-suite of a bank as the chief human resources officer for a bank. And what I learned as part of that whole process is that my story really matters, and your story really matters as well. You know, our stories make us who we are, and, you know, I wouldn't have had the perspective that I had without having lived the life that I lived. And, you know, when I look back at my career, I realized that one of the tenets of my leadership was that I showed up as myself. And frankly, it was because I knew of no other way to show up at work. And, you know, I think it's so important now more than ever that people recognize that we are all here for a reason, that we do have purpose, and it's our life's work to find that purpose in life. And it doesn't come to us easily, but, you know, who we are is important, and we must appreciate our stories, honor our stories, and just keep at it. And when you do, your life purpose comes to fruition, and you also live a life of meaning. And I think that's really important.
Well, Vicki, you had me at Sara Lee. It's late morning, and you mentioned Sara Lee. We're all in the studio kind of like, oh, okay, bring in some Sara Lee right now.
Yeah.
So tell me about this, your book, Authenticity Reawakened, The Path to Owning Your Life Story and Fulfilling Your Purpose. What was the motivation for writing this book? And first of all, how long did it take you to write it?
Sure. I get asked that question a lot, actually. So, you know, once I had always wanted to write a book but had no idea what I wanted to write about. And my publisher ultimately said, listen, you should write about something that you know something about. And I thought, well, I guess I know how to show up at work and in life as myself, but I really dove into lots and lots of research. So I didn't just give my opinion about, you know, how to show up and what it means to be authentic, which, by the way, I'm just going to backtrack and say that I believe that the definition of authenticity is knowing who you are, knowing what matters to you, and showing up in the world in a way that reflects that to the extent that you wish to do so. So all of that means, you know, understand who you are, know your values, and then decide what you're going to share with other people. You don't have to share your whole life story, but know who you are and know what matters. And it took me about 7 months. Once I got going and really dove into the research, it took me 7 months from the first word on the page to the last.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the reason I asked that is because, you know, there are a lot of aspiring writers out there, me included, mm-hmm. and you do think, wow, I want to write about something, but it can take time because you do need to concentrate and all these other, you know, work and play and family and all these other mm-hmm. things can, at least for me, can, you know, dismantle all that. So I guess that's one of the reasons I asked you, how long did it take you writing? Because it can be painstakingly long for some people.
Yes, it is a very serious process. And, you know, it's like everything else. You just have to stick at it. And if it's meaningful enough, and if the time is right, it will happen. And it's also, I would say, it's a courageous thing to do because you are putting a piece of your heart and soul out into the world. And nowadays, people can pick you apart and all of that kind of thing if they want to on social media and all. But, you know, I think I went into it saying, you know, I'm just going to do my very best. That's how I actually lived my life so far and how I worked. I'm going to do my best and let the chips fall where they may. And the book has done very well, and I've had really great reviews, and I'm really proud of what I put out there.
Fantastic. You know, it is amazing that it's named Authenticity Reawakened, because you mentioned social media, and we know that social media can give a sort of skewed view of a person. you know, it's not often, you know, I probably rarely have ever posted a photo of me angry or mad or upset or, you know, it's, I kind of look at it as marketing. You want to put your best foot forward. So, you know, you're seeing one part of me or one part of this person, and so much of it is, and if you look at just, say, a platform like Twitter, we know so many people have fake handles, so they could become somebody else, so they're not being authentic. Mm-hmm. What were you thinking about just bringing back authenticity?
Yeah, and you, first of all, you're absolutely right that people's A games are what you will see on social media. And so to me, again, that's sort of why I go back to the know who you are, because you can put all kinds of fake images of yourself out into the world, fake perspectives and personas and all of that. But at the end of the day, you have to come home and look yourself in the eye, in the mirror, and say, and you have to live with yourself. So I believe that when you're, if you're constantly faking your way through life, it starts eating away at you, and you can never have that, you know, pure, happy heart, if you will, if you're always showing up as somebody else. Because, you know, at the end of the day, when you go to sleep, you have to say, did I do my best? Did I show up in today the way that reflects my values? Did I, you know, do something good for somebody else? Or did I help someone along the way? Whatever those things are that are important to you, you have to answer those questions, and nobody else has to know the answers to those questions but you.
But let me ask you something, Vicki. Why is it important to be authentic? Because so many of us are, we don't want to show people exactly who we are, because mm-hmm. maybe we have a tough time living up to our own expectations, and we're trying to put that, like you say, our A game on there, because if people really saw, quote unquote, the real us, they may not be as impressed by you. I'll take, for example, I'll just use me as a punching bag. So many, you know, I've been a Chicago radio journalist for a long time. I'm on WBZ doing a lot of work. And so many times people come up to me, Mike, oh, I hear you all the time and I'm a big fan. And, oh, where do you live in Chicago? And I'm like, well, I actually live in Northwest Indiana. And I feel like, oh, did I just take me down a notch? Or, you know, sorry, I happen to like being in the region and pay less taxes or whatever up from here. So I kind of feel like taking a little bit of the shine on me. But people are afraid to show their authenticity, their authentic selves. But why do you think that is important?
Well, I've had a lot of people ask me, why do you even care? And I will just say that the reason I care is I don't think that, you know, we're dealing with so many challenges in our world, and I think it's time for each of us to say, you know what, life is short. When you look back on your life, do you want to be somebody who looks back and says, yeah, I was successful, but I showed up as somebody I am not my whole life? And so I think that that's so important. It's always been really important to me to have people be able to share their thoughts. And you know, we're in Hispanic Heritage Month now, which is an interesting time for us. And I think about this, and I think, you know what? Organizations are focused on diversity and inclusion. Well, you can't include people properly if you really never know who they are. So there's a lot of bigger things, nice posters, nice buzzwords like inclusion and diversity, or career achievement, or career pathing, or whatever it is, and if none of those things really come to life if you're not able to show those aspects of who you are. And again, I'm going to reiterate, you get to decide what you're going to share, you know, and I think the more, my book walks you through the how do you know and honor your life story. And when you look back at the things you've already experienced in life, those very difficult, challenging times that all of us have in our lifetimes, and even the really good ones, you want to honor that. And when you honor that the way you should deeply, then you say, you know what, I've been through a lot. So you know what, I don't care if somebody knows that I don't live in Chicago. It sort of diminishes some of those things that seemingly on the surface are so important. I don't care that everybody likes me. I care about the people who I love most, knowing that I care about them and that they're part of my value system.
You got about a minute left. Let me ask you this. Where can people find your book and where can they find you?
Sure. So thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it. The book is on Amazon, so you can get it both the Kindle version, and I just finished the Audible version too, so hopefully that'll be out there soon, and the book is there as well. And then you can follow me at vickizanavor.com, that's VickiZanavor.com. And on Instagram, I'm at VZNavor, and I post something, including a blog, every week. And I post something every day, but my blog is weekly.
Fantastic, fantastic. And that is VickiZNavor, author of Authenticity Reawakened, The Path to Owning Your Life Story and Fulfilling Your Purpose. Vicki, thank you so much for being here today on Off Mic.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. And that is all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank all my guests. You can hear this show again as a podcast by going to lakeshorepublicradio.org. I want to thank my producer, the great D. Dotson over here, and everybody here at Lakeshore Public Radio trying to make great radio for you and, get those donations dollars in. So thank you very much and have a safe holiday weekend.